You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What are you even worried about? It's Worry Week on The Wire.
What an excellent sting. I love that one. What's up, Justin?
So last week, two of former Cambodian leaders from the Khmer Rouge has been found guilty of genocide that caused at least 1.7 million deaths in Cambodia in the 1970s. But now I'm just going to have a very brief description of what happened in Cambodia before then, and there's a lot of geopolitics involved, but I'm going to boil that down to describing two individuals and how they panned out the ideologies of different regimes in Cambodia. And the first one is Norodom Sihanouk. He was the king of Cambodia, and he is a key figure for Cambodian independence because he personally persuaded the French to give them that thing in 1953. He became king in 1941 but abdicated in 1955 in order to run in parliament because Cambodia is a constitutional monarchy, which after his abdication, he formed a party called the Sankum, or in English, the Popular Socialist Community, and won 83% of the votes in Cambodia's first election in 1955 and controlled the whole National Assembly. And basically, his policies is on a program called Buddhist Socialism because he viewed socialism as an ideal concept for establishing social equality and fostering national cohesion. And he is a Buddhist himself, and he believes Buddhism is the best way for Cambodia to go forward. Like, even in today, you go to Cambodia and still see Buddhism is very influential there.
Right.
Yeah. But he also took a hard line against left wingers in Cambodia and did many things to try to suppress them, and these things drove them away from urban areas to the rural countryside, which is very influential in how the later Khmer Rouge regime arose to power. And despite Sihanouk tried to balance the left and right in the government by inviting leftists to his party, and as well as imposing a non-alignment foreign policy in the 1950s, the right wingers in the party became disillusioned and frustrated because in the late 1960s he began a policy of semi-toleration of the Viet Cong and allowed the North Vietnam Army to operate within Cambodian borders.
There you go.
Yeah, and the right wingers basically don't like it, and they invited the Americans for military support. That's what happened in 1970. Sihanouk was overthrown in a coup backed by the Americans while he was overseas touring Europe, the Soviet Union, and China.
Right.
After he was exiled, he stayed in Beijing, but that's not the him yet.
Yeah.
And now the other leader, Pol Pot. He was born in 1925, and like some other socialist figures, he was born into a prosperous farming family, and he was educated in the best schools in Cambodia, and eventually he got a scholarship to study in Paris and where he adopted communism.
Was that because of the colonization that they had, that they gave them grants to go to Paris?
Cambodia was
there.
A colony of the French Empire,
right.
When he was in Paris, he became he had connections with the Communist Party in France, and he adopted communism, particularly in the writings of Stalin and Mao. After he returned to Cambodia in 1953, he joined a Marxist-Leninist organization called the Khmer Viet Minh, which resisted Sihanouk's socialist and Buddhist campaign. And like I said before, because Sihanouk himself took a hard line against left wingers, he had to lay low. right. in the countryside.
And because he was trying to suppress them, so if yep. he came back and was too loud about it.
Yep, and yeah, yeah and he had to go to the rural areas, particularly close to the Vietnamese border, where they have right. support of the Viet Cong. And during this time in the remote northeast, Pot has been influenced by the surrounding hill tribes, who were self-sufficient in the communal living and have no use for money, and were what he thought as untainted by Buddhism. And that is really important when he came to power. Just and throughout of the rest of the 1950s, he organized and became the general secretary of the Khmer Rouge in 1963, and started a rebellion in 1968, and starting a civil war against Sihanouk's monarchy.
After 1968, eh? Big year.
A lot of things happened around the world, but yeah. that's for another story. yeah. After Sihanouk was deposed in 1970, and a republic was set up, and a pro-US republic was set up. North Vietnam and China don't like this because Vietnam, you just got a basically an American ally just next to your doorstep. Yeah. And China, who already fell out with the Soviet Union after Stalin's death, they want more allies. And having a pro-US regime at your southern border doesn't help. Mm. And what they did is they openly supported Khmer Rouge by sending forces and providing aid. And despite having the support of the US military, the pro-US republic fell in 1975, with Khmer Rouge occupying the capital Phnom Penh in April and beginning the communist rule of Cambodia, or officially known as the Democratic Kampuchea. So now we are going to the ideology part of Khmer Rouge, and unlike other socialist or communist states, which they are trying to move from an agrarian economy to a socialist society through rapid industrialization.
Right.
Khmer Rouge attempted to oppose an ideology of agrarian socialism,
right.
that we are ditching urban areas for rural agriculture. And to fulfill their goals, they launched a very large scale of social engineering. So let me just compare to this with China in the 1950s. So in China during the 1950s, Mao Zedong, he launched a campaign, a program called the Great Leap Forward,
yeah.
and has a goal of trying to surpass US and Britain in steel production. And by that, he just ditched all sorts of other stuff and concentrating on maximizing the steel production process, and through a lot of manpower,
all materials, possible.
Yeah, all resources possible in the steel production,
yeah.
and eventually, even though the numbers made up for it, the quality is so bad.
Sure.
But yeah, that's also for another story. Yeah. But the Khmer Rouge is different because it wanted to be an agricultural society. It's trying to dismantling any sort of, it's trying to dismantle any sorts of trace that could be linked to capitalist
right.
or economy, and they did so by a large-scale social engineering. The currency was abolished and replaced by bartering. Education and religion were disregarded, and agriculture became the priority of all policies. And to do that, by getting manpower for agriculture, the Khmer Rouge forced those living in the city to leave and move to the countryside to provide labor for collective farms around the country. These people were not allowed any property, and they were forced to work at least 10 hours a day, and often more.
Wow.
Their food rations were so small, they led to starvation, and millions died of starvation and diseases such as malaria in these collective farms.
Right. So, for example, just in my politics class this semester, we were learning all about like examples of authoritarian states where the control has gone too far.
Yeah,
and
that's
talk
a
about
classic example.
In Cambodia, this is the one that you're talking about.
So put it in some numbers. Phnom Penh, before, even after the Cambodian civil war, has a population of 3 million, but under the regime of Khmer Rouge, because so many people were forced to move out.
Right.
Their number is only less than a couple of thousands. Yeah.
Right.
So many people have left, and many have died on the roads while they were moving to the rural areas. Yeah. And the regime also frequently arrested and execute anyone they consider, quote, treasonous in order to achieve what they call as cleaning up. Yeah.
Oh.
This included purging Buddhist monks, Christians, Muslims, or basically anyone associated with the previous regime, and ethnic minorities such as Vietnamese, Thai, and Chinese. Yeah. Other categories of these so-called enemies included professionals, intellectuals, and, quote, economic saboteurs, which is only just people who performed badly in the fields because they spent their previous lives in the city. So,
right.
Yeah. The Khmer Rouge was overthrown in 1979 after Vietnam invaded Cambodia over border conflicts and uncovered various execution centers that performed systematic killing. There were academic, I remember they were academic studies that there were at least 190 of them all over Cambodia. And yeah, in just 4 years between 1975 and 1979, 2 million people, or a quarter of Cambodia's population, are dead, killed by the Khmer Rouge. And yeah, the story ends here for now, but here are some final outcomes. Sihanouk was reinstalled as king again in 1993 after UN intervention. And,
okay.
Yeah, but he abdicated again in 2004 as a transfer of power. And he stayed in Cambodia ever since, but he died in Beijing in 2012 out of natural reasons.
Right.
In a hospital in Beijing. And for Pol Pot, he fled to the border after his regime fell between Thailand and Cambodia and died in 1998.
Okay.
Yeah, but still after today, when you go to Cambodia or Phnom Penh, there were still signs of the genocide around. There's a museum in the suburbs of Phnom Penh called the S21 concentration camp. It was a former high school, but it was transferred to a execution center by the Khmer Rouge, to carry out cleansing.
Right.
And I remember at least 18,000 people were killed there.
Right.
Yeah, but that's the end of the story. Right.
Thanks, Justin. An important and ambitious crossover between our Worry Week on ideologies and international news this week. So thank you.
Worry Week on The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.